Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Welcome to this episode, everyone. Today, my guest is Robin Hill, returning guest, Robin Hill, author, mental health therapist, doctoral candidate, and you're currently working as an agency administrator. You're returning to the show, and I'd like to say welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited about our conversation today.
So let me just start. I just recently came across like my calendar or something. Is May Mental Health Month? Did I read that right?
I believe so. I believe it is Mental Health Awareness Month, yes.
I know this isn't the main topic, but what is, like, why is the need of that? I mean, have we stopped the stigma, or is there still, like, a lot of work to do?
I think there's still a lot of work to do. I think we've got a lot done. I do believe that we have addressed and brought a lot of awareness out, but I do believe there still is that fear of opening up the, and then there's still a lot to learn. I think COVID has brought a whole new level of mental health stuff that we have to still address. I just was recently reading about loneliness. And I mean, this is information that's been out forever, but we don't even talk about it being the leading cause of death. Early death is loneliness and isolation. So as people are losing their minds, it's a real thing right now as we experience this pandemic. So, and as we move our discussion into relationships and these holidays, the pain is real when you're losing relationships and dealing with your mental health. So this is a real thing. The stigma, the issues that we experience, it's not so, I mean, it's very clinical, but it's very real. The pain that we experience is very real, very organic, very natural. And it is something that needs to be talked about.
Is loneliness like a diagnosis, or how is that categorized?
It's not a diagnosis, no, but it can trigger a diagnosis. Isolation and loneliness are symptoms. It's definitely, like if I'm dealing with depression, if I'm diagnosing depression, one of the things I'm gonna look for is isolation and withdrawal. It can cause someone to even withdraw more. But from what I was talking about a second ago, it can cause you to get sick, to be withdrawn from people. We are built for community. We are built for relationship. And so not having it can cause all kinds of illness in itself. It can cause psychosocial delays and lack of development in children and teens and even adults. Our personalities are developed out of relationship. So lacking that socialization and having isolation and loneliness can cause so many maladies in itself. So that in itself is not an illness, but it can cause many illnesses.
Is there one group or age group that suffers more or has worse effects when they're dealing with loneliness?
I think probably, and I don't quote me on it, but I do believe, because I just, you know, like I said, I'm a doctoral candidate, you're reading like a gajillion chapters in a night. But I think I saw definitely infants.
Oh, wow.
They don't have that initial bond. If they don't get that initial bond, that, you know, that's what comic book villains are made out of.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah. It's like, oh, and then it's like, that's kind of awful. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, and thank you for indulging me on that, because I just, we talk about loneliness, and I think it's one of those words where people use it kind of like they say, I'm depressed, but they're not depressed. Oh, I'm just so depressed. It's like a throwaway.
Yeah,
lack of a better word. And I think, you know, to the lay person, I don't know if I would know what to look for. Somebody's like, I'm just kind of feeling lonely. Like, I would give that bad advice that we tell people that are, you know, when they're depressed, like, well, just, you know, oh, you're just feeling down.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the thing you're not supposed to do. What's some advice for that? If you, like, if someone says, I think I'm just really feeling lonely, you know, I think culturally you want to tell them, it's okay. Like, it's all that. We all go through that. But what's the thing to say there?
And that's okay, because a lot of times we do want to normalize. You know, that is a natural response, a natural human response is to normalize that. We want to say, you know, what you're suffering from, I suffer from too. And everything comes in varying degrees. Even depression has its varying degrees. And loneliness, everything has its degrees. But if someone is saying, I think I need some help, you know, you can say, you know, we all deal with that. But if you feel yours is, you know, then maybe you do need to reach out to someone and get some help. Maybe they need counseling, or maybe they just need to find a support group. There are plenty of support groups out there. Maybe they need connection to resources. If you know of a group that they might get involved in, or get in some volunteer activities or something. Because, you know, sometimes people may say, I don't think I need counseling, but I need something. You know, get involved, get connected within your community.
For the parents listening, what's the, like, would the kids say, mommy, I'm lonely? Or what's something a parent should look for? Because I know, especially with school age kids, you know, especially if they don't have siblings, you know,
yeah.
What are they saying? Or what's that?
A whole year of virtual school. Yeah. I highly recommend mentoring programs, definitely for kids. Okay. Parents need all the assistance that they need anyway. We've lost our sense of community that we used to have. We used to send your kids outside, and then all the kids on the street used to play together, and all the parents used to look out for all the kids, and we don't have that anymore.
Right.
So get them into a mentoring program. There's all kinds of STEM programs and Tri-C, and the museum's got all kinds of stuff. You can get your kids involved in things where they can meet other kids and find their little thing, because all, you know, not all kids are into the same thing. So parents are always trying to sign all the little boys up to Pop Warner football. Every boy is not going to play football. You know, some boys might want to get into some martial arts. Some boys might want to get into some yoga.
Or chess or something. Yeah.
Right. And there's some good chess programs. Some of the little girls might want to do STEM programs. They might want to do some martial arts. You know, you got to find what's good for your kid, not try to streamline them right into what you think every kid wants to do.
Like, that's a whole, like, we got to come back and talk about
that. Yeah, that's a whole show probably in itself.
It is. Right. You know, because I just think about how I chose activities for my kids. I didn't know if you really wanted to do it, but like some mm-hmm. parents was like, oh, your kid's got to do that. But I'll digress. You'll come back for that one.
Okay.
So we kind of talked about it. We touched on grief. We touched on loneliness and how that can kind of cause an onset of depression and some other mental health mm-hmm. Concerns. What are, like, we're talking, I'm thinking about grief, and I know for myself, when my mom passed, I could not do Mother's Day. I hated Mother's Day, and I had little kids, which made it even worse because my kids wanted to celebrate me mm-hmm. and I didn't want to celebrate. But what, like, I'm assuming that there's some kind of health impact if you just don't come out of that, or what does that look like?
So there's different types of grief. Mm-hmm. So let me get my little cheat sheet out here. So there's acute grief, which everyone goes through the normal acute grief. That's the moment of grief, and you lose you're in that place of loss. Everyone experiences, you know, your normal stages of grief. And then there's the complicated grief, which is what you were going through, where you kind of couldn't come out of it. And it stayed around for a little bit longer than you had thought it would have. And it had a little bit stronger sting because it just hurt really bad. It didn't seem like it was going to go away, and it lasted maybe for years. And that one seemed a little more clinical. You probably need to talk to somebody to kind of come out of it. And that one is more, that's tough. That's tough. And it's just what happens, because for whatever reason, sometimes we just don't want to let go. And I think we get stuck because if we feel like, I think C.S. Lewis talks about it a lot in his book, Grief Observed, where we have this fear, if we do let go of the grief, we feel like we've let go of the person. Mm. But when we really do work through the grief and we realize that the memories don't actually go away, we can actually move forward in our grief process, then we get to this place of integrated grief. Integrated grief is, it never really goes away. You're never going to stop missing your mother. Acute grief may come back. You have those moments where you just smell a rose that just reminds you of that time. And all of a sudden the pain comes back and the crying comes back. But it's not like it's like that all the time. It's just random. One day you have a waffle and it's like, oh my gosh, remember that time when I went for waffles and you're crying? And then it goes away. That's that integrated grief. But you're always going to miss them. That, and so that misnomer, we think that you go through grief and you get over it and you move like your life moves forward. That's a misnomer. You're going to always miss the person who carried you and brought you into this world. I don't think you can ever, ever get over that. But I don't want to, and maybe I'm jumping ahead because you're probably going to get to this question. There are some people who have a painful loss because the relationship wasn't a strong bond. So their grief is a little more painful because they didn't have the beautiful memories. They didn't have the loving relationship. And so now their grief and their pain is filled with a lot of hurt.
Is that the same as the three structures of grief that you talked about? It's just with the added hurt, or is it something different?
Yeah, it's the same thing, but it's the relationship that never was. We never got to have them waffles. We never got to have, and so there's that anger that stays around, that comes back up of what we never got to have. And so there's a lot of pain there. They don't get to have the fond memories. They get to have a lot of missed memories.
So as you talked about the different stages, I know that I've heard that a lot of times when people are grieving, they've had people say like they should be past their grieving, or how do you know when your grief has gone into the complicated stage from acute? Or how do you know, like, is there a time, like if you're still being bothered, obviously 4 years from now, you know, people grieve differently. We say things like that, which I think empowers people to keep grieving.
Yeah. I think from a clinical perspective, we start to look at like, if it's gone, I think the diagnostic manual probably says six months to probably a year. I think we expect you to not be in a place of like devastation about 6 months to a year out. And then we look for other symptoms too. I remember I had this one lady, I think it'd been years, probably about 2 years, her husband had passed. And I mean, she just affect flat. She just shut down emotionally from the world. Her husband wasn't the greatest person in the world, but she never got to tell anybody. Mm. So it wasn't until it was like me working with her for a good while, when I finally pulled out the story of him just kind of being a drunk a-hole. Wow. Once she got that story out, it's like she snapped back to this world. Like I finally let her tell that story, that he wasn't the greatest man on earth.
So what I'm hearing you say is like that was kind of holding back.
It was
closure of the grief cycle.
For her, it was. She was stuck in this. I'm this grieving widow.
Don't speak ill of the dead.
Don't speak ill of him, but I don't think any. You know, she just needed to express some anger towards him. You know, and once I let her do that, and also giving her the freedom to move forward and the freedom to do things that he would never let her do. Like go out and, you know, go volunteer somewhere, go do something. And once she started doing that and realizing that, you know, you can do these things now, he's not here anymore, okay. You know, and it's okay. And so she started to live a little, and it just like, she came alive. Wasn't that she, and giving him the freedom to say, you don't have to hate him either, right. Just because he was mean. You don't have to hate him. He had a mean streak, but he also took care of his family. He was good with the kids. You don't have to hate him.
And just, I guess it sounds like to deal with the complicated emotions, you know, like to be okay with all the things.
Exactly.
So tell me this, is there a health impact by not dealing with the grief? Like, could it give you a heart attack? Is there some kind of thing that by being left unchecked, you're actually going to physically see manifestations?
There's something called the broken heart syndrome. I had a client, she had lost a baby and her heart weakened from the grief of that loss. So you can definitely get sick. Stress alone can make you sick. Autoimmune disorders are developed from stress of unexpressed emotions. Our mind, body, and souls are all connected. And so when we don't deal with our emotions, it will come out physically and it will come out spiritually. When one is out of whack, the other two will automatically go out of whack. So if we're not dealing with our emotions, our spirits will show it, and our body will show it. If our spirits aren't dealing with something, our minds will show it, our bodies will show it. If we physically aren't dealing with something, our minds will show it, and our spirits will show it. They're all connected like a baby mobile. So you will have to deal with whatever's going on with you emotionally. So if you are not dealing with your grief, it's going to show. You ever see someone that just look like they're worn down physically? And what have they been? And they might just gotten up that morning. Why do you look worn down already? And it's just morning. It's usually something on their mind. So you definitely need to address what's going on with you mentally.
So where's the first, I have two questions. Mm-hmm. Where's the first place you go? So I, you know, in that case of the person that's like, they're feeling worn down, I don't know if they know that they're grieving, like I'm still grieving my, you know, my brother that died. Mm-hmm. Or do they go to their primary physician and just say, I'm feeling worn down? Like, what's that person's first step?
Usually, sometimes we aren't even aware, but that's the beautiful thing. I think nowadays with healthcare is getting more holistic. A lot of these doctors are doing the wellness checks for you. So they're asking the questions and then they're making the referrals. So your physician might already ask you, so how are you feeling? Do you think that you, you know, how are you stressed? They're doing these wellness checks, checking your mental and then making a referral. I just went to the doctor the other day and they asked me certain questions. And well, you think that you're stressed? You think you're depressed? And I was just laughing because I already knew that by the way they're asking, I could tell they were checking my mental without saying they were checking my mental. And I just smiled and I was like, no, I'm good. You know, they were going to, well, we can refer you to someone. Yeah,
right, right.
I'm good. I'm good. So that's the good thing. Even if you go to your doctor, sometimes if they're really in tune, they'll make that referral. But if you don't, if they don't, and you know that you're mentally worn down, you can, you know, Google a therapist. It's very easy nowadays to find mental health help. You can just Google therapist, put your zip code in, and there's directories all over where you can find someone.
Okay. My other question, and we're going to circle back to the point you just said, though. You mentioned broken heart syndrome. Mm-hmm. Is that a physical thing? Like I've heard it. Mm-hmm. I believe I've seen it. You know, mm-hmm. when my grandfather died, like my grandma kind of fell out like at that moment, but they had been together 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. And people are like, you know, because of that loss in that moment. Yeah. But, you know, that broken heart syndrome, does it, yeah, the weakened heart, is it actual, like, you're going to have heart problems now?
The heart becomes a weaker vessel in that moment. It becomes a heart condition where they have to be very careful. The heart's not pumping stronger anymore. It's literally a physical condition. And I forget the actual physical term of the disease, but it becomes like a heart disease.
Is that like a permanent, or does it, your heart get stronger again?
I read up a little bit on it at the time that I had the client. I can't remember. I think it can resolve itself. I just can't remember.
Okay. I just didn't know. Like I've always heard it, you know, kind of, I would say like the old folks say, oh, they heart broken.
Yeah.
So-and-so's gone or, you know, and I just,
it's not the same as like heartache. Like when we, you know, somebody broke your heart, it ain't the same as that pain, you know, when you're just in there crying all day long. It's not the same. Like literally a condition happens to the heart and, you know, they got to monitor you and you got to be careful with, yes, this client definitely developed a weaker heart.
Wow. So, you know, I want to talk about Mother's Day, Father's Day, Memorial Day coming up because there are a lot of people that lost a lot of loved ones over this year. And so for some, this is their first or second. There might be in that 6 month span that we just talked about or on that border of acute going into. And, you know, number one, I just wanted to basically be a help for those folks to say, like, I know it's hard. I know, like, I see you to affirm that. But what's the advice for that? Because a lot of people, again, being, good intentioned, mm-hmm. might give some bad advice. So I wanted to talk to you because what is that? Like, what should they be doing? Should they just disconnect from everything? Don't answer the door, don't answer the phone, or should they push themselves to be in spaces that they might not want to be in? Or like, what's the answer?
It's tough. I just had two friends from school that I went to like junior high and high school, lost their moms in the last week. It's crazy. This is just a crazy conversation they even have, but just watching their pain this week. Accept the help that can come because this is hard. And a lot of times we try to do a lot in our own strength, but rest, because this is an emotional toll and you don't even realize how exhausted you are right now. If somebody wants to bring you a bucket of chicken, let them bring you a bucket of chicken, because there's going to be people at your door bothering you all day long. The last thing you need to be worried about is hospitality. So if you have food at the house, or if somebody's there wanting to vacuum your rugs or whatever, let people come help you and put them out when you need to put them out. I'm going to put it that way, because people will overstay their welcome as well and will drain you, because grief is exhausting. So if you need to put people out, put people out. Get you some strong sergeant of arms that if they can put people out for you, if that's what you need to do. But usually after the funeral's over, a lot of people disappear. Mm-hmm. So if there's some people that want to just sit with you, bring you a fruit basket, accept that, because their intentions is to be there. And it's kind of hard because silence is loud. Mm-hmm. Silence is loud. So yeah. Another piece of advice is take a break from the grief. I always tell people this, grief will be there when you get back.
So what does that mean? Like, what does that look like?
So get up and go to the movies. You don't have to sit there and cry all day. You don't owe grief anything. So, you know, getting up and going and doing something normal is not disrespectful to the life that you just lost. I've had people like, you know, widows who felt like, felt some sort of guilt, like getting up and going shopping or something, just going out get up and do something normal. Grief will be here when you get back. When you come back to the house and it's quiet, it will be here. So get up and go and enjoy a good movie.
Yeah, do something. I was talking to my own personal therapist and we had a conversation, and she was saying, it's just go push yourself to do, even if you don't want to watch the movie, she said, just by sitting in a movie.
Yeah.
It just by getting out and getting in that car and driving that place, you're already kind of beating grief or any other issues at that point, because you're not sitting in it.
Yeah. So that's what I call it, taking a break from it. Because, you know, some people feel like they really do. People don't realize they feel a guilt. Like they feel like they owe grief or something. Like they have to sit in it or something. And just, no, it will be there. I promise you, you're not going to forget your mother. You're not going to forget your uncle or cousin or who. You won't forget. The pain is now, it's not, it will be there. Take a break.
So if we can switch gears, because what you just said made me think about, especially for women who do the, I don't know who I am without that person. And it might not even be someone that's passed away. It might be, I hear that a lot of with moms that have like older kids, or the kids are like juniors in high school, seniors, like they're getting ready to leave. And it's that fear of, I don't know what I like.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine that for folks that lost a parent or a spouse or even a child, you know, I've been in this role for so long. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I like. How do they get started? Because
it's difficult. And I have wanted to do, this is what I really would love to do, is start group therapies for this reason. But it's so difficult, especially in our communities, to get group therapies going. But this is the reason why, because we need social, therapeutic social environments to kind of get that started. Safe spaces to practice out socialization so that we can be ready to go out and try new places. But, you know, the more we can create things, go try a sip and sew or a sip and whatever paint. Go try these things. You have to just try some new things. Join an auxiliary, join a community organization, join a board, do those things. One of the ways I've met most of the people I know in Cleveland is I joined an organization, or two or three. Find one that dues are not ridiculously high.
Right.
I mean, if you got the money to spend it on high dues, do that. But that's how I met people and I got involved. And I'm an extreme introvert, but I did push myself, and that's how I met people. And I develop my identity outside of my kids and my job.
And I'll say, I think, you know, just to do the plug of Black Girl in Cleveland and all that, that's kind of that space we exist in. Like, that's why we do the events, because I was someone that, you know, beside my mom being gone a few years, I realized that my kids were starting to not be the little tykes where we got soccer and swimming and, you know, like, let's get a kids meal. Like, they were starting to develop their own friends and activities. And, you know, especially when you get to middle school age, they don't want to hang out with you anymore. Like, I'm still cool, you know, but they just didn't think so. So it was that, like, in a few years, they're gone altogether.
Yeah.
And now what? And, you know, had I not started working on that process early, yeah, number one, there wouldn't be a Black girl in Cleveland, but I wouldn't, like, I wouldn't know you. So I can pinpoint, like, from a certain year, everyone I know now, I had to meet after that change of, I've got to start meeting people. There's more to life than just going to work, coming home, feeding the kids, putting kids to bed, and then doing it all over again.
Right.
I call it the 4-block radius life.
Right.
And so that's kind of why we do these events. Like, we do the book clubs and stuff, just to get women together, not necessarily to bring a man out and be like, girl, you gotta find, but like, let's just
something to do. Book club.
Yeah, come out and talk.
I thought I keep coming up with things, but the introvert's like, oh, not right now. But I have some ideas of stuff that I want to
hang out with us.
Right. Just some reason to hang out, some reason to just, you know, I've, you know, some brunches that I want to do, just come eat. And I'm like, but the introvert's like, I need an extrovert to help me get the conversation going. But
and I'm an extreme introvert. People don't know that. I'll just say, like, oh my God, I just don't like people because I just can't handle that. And so that's kind of why Black Girl is set up the way it is. But it's, let's get folks out like me, because I needed that person to say, do you want to go to brunch? And sometimes I'm like, I want to talk about a book. So if somebody wants to, so it's really, I mean, I guess I just do events for introverts, but it's just that idea that I don't want anyone to feel like I don't know who I am as I start aging, because something's changed in my life. Like, that's that's hard. And that's, you know, I don't want that for any woman or any person. So that's kind of, you know, the soapbox on why we do what we do. But I think what you're saying is good, is just realize, you know, who you are and start that process, you know, early, especially, and especially not to say if you have the gift to know that your parents are aging. So, or they're sick. So, you know, your mom's been battling a disease for 8 years. You can start working on yourself.
This is what, and that's what I've been going through since December. My mom has been sick. Looks like we're we're on a plateau right now, knock on wood, but it's been tough. And so dealing with the grief process of an age and an ill parent and the what ifs and the stress of that all, and dealing with the physical, as you were asking about it, like, it's been taking its toll on my body because my mind doesn't have time to process. I have to get her to appointments. So if you would have asked me, how you doing? Oh, I'm great, I'm fine. I just got to get her to appointments. I got to get it. But my body was like,
just laser focused on what you, the to-do list.
Right. My body was like, yo, we're not okay. We are so not okay. Hair falling out, everything. We are so not okay.
Yeah, I had a friend that said that. She's like, my hair is just falling out. And she's like, because I'm just so stressed. And she couldn't verbalize what the stress was. Like, why are you stressed? Like, I think I asked her that. Why are you stressed? And she's got a lot going on. But what's that stressor? Because I can't even help.
Right. So to get into the neurobiology of it all, the body will react a lot quicker sometimes than the mind can even comprehend. The brain is set up that way. Our amygdala can sometimes take it before our frontal cortex to even process it. And that's what was happening to me. And so I had to stop because I could feel it. My back was out, my hair is falling out. Okay, so my body's reacting, Robin. You are not okay. You're telling everyone you're okay. You're telling yourself you're okay. I'm in my mind thinking I'm okay. You're not okay. And so I'm talking to God, I'm not okay. I think I'm okay, but I'm not okay. My body reacted way before my mind even could catch it.
So is that the trigger or the alarm, you know, to say like, my hair's falling out or something, oh, my face is breaking out. Is that the moment we should kind of do a, I call it a systems check, like, okay, what's going on in my life right now? Is that the kind of thing that triggers it? Because a lot of times you can be like, oh, it must be this job. My hair is falling out. This is my boss is crazy. And it's not that.
Right. And it's, and what we've been taught to believe is we're not dealing with something, you're ignoring it or whatever, but that was not necessarily the case. And I totally felt like I had everything under control, but my body was still reacting. And so when I learned, as I'm learning neurobiology, and I'm nowhere near an expert in this, but as I'm learning about the amygdala and how the amygdala responds to stress, and it can grab stuff way before we even can, this is the frontal cortex is when a triggering event happens and our mind processes it, interprets it, and then responds. That's how stuff comes in. That's how we normally deal with stuff. I see a cat, I'm frightened because I hate cats, and now I react frightened. But when we have an amygdala response, it doesn't even hit here. Flight or flight response happens. So that's what the amygdala, I'm pointing here because it's somewhere in the middle of the brain.
Okay. So fight or flight, is it true? And I don't know, is it fight, flight, or freeze? Sometimes I've heard, is freeze in that mix?
Yeah. And then there's a fawn in there too, where you kind of like comply in a trauma response type thing.
Okay.
But yeah, so there's that, yeah.
And I bring that up because I know that a lot of times people are familiar with fight or flight, but
freeze is one.
But if you're not acknowledging freeze or you don't know it, you don't know that you're still in fight or flight.
Right.
You know, you're just sitting there like, well, I'm not scared because I'm not, you know, in that space. And so I just wanted to double check that because I've heard it, and also let folks know that that's a thing. We can be frozen in a space, and it's not just standing still like a cartoon frozen, like
just
be in the situation.
In the situation, fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Fawn
is the other one where it's kind of like, why did you let it happen?
Is that like ignoring the signals? Like the train just kept taking off and like I knew I should have jumped off. Is that what that is?
Yeah. Huh. And that's a trauma response. But that's all, we're getting a PTSD now.
Yeah, sorry.
But back to grief. Sometimes we respond to things and don't even realize, well, our body is responding. So yes, illness can happen. You know, heart attacks can happen and strokes can happen and all that type of stuff can happen and you don't even realize that something has attacked your body.
So tell me this, because we're looking at the Mother's Day and Father's Day coming up. If the parent is grieving of some kind of loss, whatever that is, how does that impact the family or the kids? Like, does that impact the kids? So if the mom is grieving another child's loss, a family member loss, you know, does that impact the children?
Definitely. Now, one thing about children are very resilient, but definitely children will feel your emotions. They're your children. Children feel you sad if you watch a sad movie. Children will feel you. They feel you. I watched my son. He knows when my asthma's flared up before I know my asthma's flared up. I think I'm very terrible at knowing something's wrong with myself. But anyway, he will sit there. He will say, why are you breathing like that? You need your inhaler? You know, that's just our children. They just know. But it's just the mechanism of the family relationship. It's a system. It operates that way. And will it have a long-lasting negative effect on them? Depends on what all was done during that grieving time. I mean, if it was a tumultuous time, maybe. Will they remember it as that time when mom was really sad? Maybe. It all depends on what all happened. But children are very resilient too. I remember in grad school learning, my one professor said, you really got to work to screw your kids up. You really got to work at it. But get to work hard. So don't worry about it. Like thinking you screwed them up or something.
I take relief with that. Like, wow, that's good to know. So, you know, first of all, I just want to say thank you. Number one, thank you for circling us back to grief, because we could have gone down a whole rabbit hole there. Yeah. And you know, thank you for always joining us. And I don't want to take up too much of your time. And so, you know, as we get ready to close, you know, the question is, like, final thoughts or words for folks that are not anticipating this to be the happiest Mother's Day or Father's Day.
Mm-hmm. So I always say develop a self-care plan for grief, right? You want to make sure you have some coping skills in your bucket. So like I said, one, make sure you're taking a break from your grief, allowing yourself time to grieve. Don't, you know, emotions are like waves. They come in, they go back out. Sometimes it's a tsunami. Sometimes it's a little roll-in wave. Don't be afraid of the waves because they will go back out. So allow them to come in and go back out. But if you need to take a break, get up, go to movies, get up, go for a walk, whatever, make yourself feel better. Distract from the pain, improve your mood. Those are your coping skills because the grief is going to come back. So it's okay to distract yourself because it ain't going nowhere. Improve your mood. Do those things to help yourself feel better. Reinforce your support system. Get some good supports around you, not annoying supports, because nothing worse than having some, you're already feeling bad and have somebody annoying around you.
Can we define good supports? Like, you know, I think people think like, I got my friends or my girls or this guy I'm dating, but they might not be a good support.
Good supports are people, well, I'm not going to be rigid about the supports because sometimes we discount some really good supports that, you know, we can look down on some people who are some good supports.
Okay.
You know, there's always that one person that may not be a stand-up community person, but they will come and clean your house from top to bottom. So,
right.
You know, there's some people that could be supports that we may not always look up to, but they're good supports. But definitely a good listening ear. I think also a person who can just come and sit with you. We have lost that ability to just sit and not make a person talk about something. I remember one time a client said, you know, she always was comforting the grief of other people. She needed people to just come sit with her, but they would always come and cry, he was such a good man. So they weren't really helping her because she was comforting them and she's the one that lost her husband. So, you know, supports that can come and help hold her up, help hold you up is what you need. Literal support.
Yeah, and also that make you, I guess, that you don't feel, you feel better while they're there. Like, you know, you can be around, you can be in a room full of people.
Yeah.
And just feel more exhausted, or you just are, like you said, you're annoyed and because they're not the right people.
They need to go. Put them all out and don't feel any guilt about it. You all got to go. I'm tired now and get your sleep. Yeah. If their energy and as a, and I always keep stressing this introvert, and I'm going to have to do a workshop or something on this one day. If an introvert, energy means everything. So you could be my good friend, but your energy is draining me. Or you can be my really good friend and your presence don't mean anything. I could take a nap with you right here in my house and I don't even know that you're here. It's all about your energy. And so you could be here all day long and it won't bother me. But then there's a person that can be there for an hour and they take all my energy away. They got to go. That person has to go. So support is very important. They got to feel good. So as you're going through your grief cycle, third thing, create a tradition for their memory. I've noticed a lot of people just box away memories sometimes. They box away memories and then just go visit grave sites. And it's like, that's just remembering their death. That's not remembering the life.
What might that look like?
You have
an example of a
tradition?
Yeah.
So like if you do Mother's Day, cook something that she would eat or she would fix. Like with my grandmother, I cook her corn. She was make corn with the peppers in it and the onions. So I cook her corn or I'll make the dressing her way. Because I've stopped cooking the big holiday meals like I usually do. But if I do cook something, holiday meal, I make something, I'll get that corn. Because something about the smell of it through the house, that just makes me remember my grandma. So I'll do that tradition in her memory. It's her corn, that's what I do. Or like I snap the green beans. That's what I'm doing for my grandma. So those type of traditions. Be careful to not enshrine a person. That's just...
Meaning what?
Become, you know, you don't want to deify people.
Gotcha.
You know, it's just scary. Just scary, you know, just scary. You just don't want to enshrine them. And I've seen some shrines, and it's like, that's not, if something happens to the shrine in your home, you're going to have a whole nother meltdown. Mm. You want the memory of them to stay alive, not the shrine. So create a memory, a tradition or a memory. So as Mother's Day's coming, and it may be hard, but if your mama's thing was banana pudding, then get the banana pudding out. Or if she liked daisies, then go get some daisies and have them on the table. Whatever it was, that's your tradition now for her memory. And then lastly, introduce new positive behaviors in their memory. So do something new for your mother. So that's your moving forward, because now you're bringing a new behavior into her memory. So that you're moving forward with her. Like, this is for us, mom, we're gonna do something new.
Nice. So to end on an uplifting note, for anybody, like, what's a good thing for moms to think about as a whole? So, you know, we have moms are, you know, they're moms. So you have single moms, married moms, moms that are grieving, moms that are expecting, soon to be moms. You know, what are some just thoughts to do something good for yourself on Mother's Day? I mean, it's Mom's Day, so I don't expect to be doing the cooking for Mom's Day, but.
I think just, I don't know. What is, that question's throwing me. What is something good to do, you said?
What's a good tradition to start if you've got like little or kids or?
You know what? I don't know. I've never really, I'm going to be honest with you. My kids never really have done much for me for Mother's Day. That has not been, I think I've, my, I don't know.
So I'm laughing while you think, because I had to tell my kids to stop buying me bubble bath sets. Like, right. Every year they would get one of those big baskets, mm-hmm. that I would never use. Like, it was overly perfumey and just, mm-hmm. like, I don't know where they got it, but every year they would come home with this basket. And at one point in my bathroom closet, it was just like baskets upon baskets upon baskets.
All that perfumey stuff.
Because every month, that's what they got. And I finally, like, they're teenagers, you know, like high schoolers. I'm like, you know, please don't give me another Mother's Day basket. And they're like, but you like them.
No, I don't.
That's why you don't use them, because they're in the closet, because you just really like them. And I'm like, no. So, you know, like, we had to start, and they're still shocked. Like, when you, like, even to this day, I think they're thinking of a bath set, and I don't want that. But
my daughter asked. She said, what do you want for Mother's Day? She asked me, it's just like yesterday. And I said, I want flowers. Because, you know, I'm not a big gifty person. I'm just not. So I guess I think that would be the thing. I think get flowers. That's just me, though.
Yeah, I think it's just empower your kids in the right way to get something that you want. So, like, I didn't want my kids to try to make me a fancy dinner when they were little, because that meant I'm making my own fancy dinner, or a mess for me to
that you gotta clean
because you're
up.
Six, you know, so it's those kind of things. So I think it's really, I think the thought is guide the family, do something. I mean, it is your day. If you need a babysitter that day, get a babysitter that day.
I got all kinds of odd little pottery things, so that's what I have, because my kids go to Shaker school, so they have a pottery and I got all kinds of weird shaped things all over
I've got one I'm looking dead at from like fifth grade. Last year I got a cactus. So
okay.
I don't know why I got a cactus, because I said I didn't want soap, so they decided I need a cactus.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that's the thing, is, you know, for moms all over, you know, definitely enjoy the day. Take care of yourself. Maybe that's the day you do your self-care routine.
Exactly.
Kids, if you're listening, maybe get your mom a yoga gift certificate or a spa day, not necessarily bubble bath.
And for the women who have been denied motherhood.
Yes.
Take care of yourself too. I know this is a hard time.
Yes.
That's another level of grief we didn't get a chance to touch.
No, and I want to. So definitely.
Yeah. That grief of not being able to have a child. And no one knows that pain. A lot of them are carrying that secretly around. Some have shared about it, but I know a lot more who don't get to voice it. and we talk about Mother's Day every year, and they don't get, we don't realize how much it just, it's like it's thrown in their face. And people ask them, why haven't you had kids? And we don't realize some of them have been trying, and a lot of them have miscarried. A lot of them have had to deal with losses. So there's that pain as well. When we're talking about this acute grief and the complicated grief, there's a lot of pain in that. So do that self-care to those women. Self-care, definitely go to the salt caves, go and pamper yourself, go get a massage. You deserve it too. We all have the innate desire. We have this in us. Mothering is in us. And so this day is for you too. Mm-hmm. So go and take care of yourself, pamper yourself. Self-care plan is for you as well.
Perfect. Awesome. My guest today was Robin Hill, author, doctoral candidate, mental health therapist, and just so many other things, including agency administrator. I thank you again for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And for all the moms, all the women, the one day mothers, the grieving moms, the everyone, I just hope you guys have a great weekend and Mother's Day. We need to just call it like Women's Day. And yeah. I thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at blackgirlincle. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.